Welcome, everybody, to a special release of the Green Lantern Corecast. I'm Ram Siddiqui, a.k.a. Kuhan. Today, I had the chance to sit down with Ron Mars and Daryl Banks about their upcoming story in the 80th anniversary issue of Green Lantern. So I'm going to go ahead and not mince any words. We're going to just get on with it. If you want to watch the video interview, that's available on our YouTube at youtube.com/GLSpotlight. So check that out as well. But if you just want to listen to the audio, then that's going to play right now. And make sure to check out the 80th anniversary Green Lantern issue on shelves June 23rd. First off, thanks guys for joining me today. On actually our one of the first shows we ever did for the Green Lantern Corecast back when it was called the Green Lantern Spotlight was with you back in 2009, March, I think, I want to say.
We were but children back then.
Yeah, I literally was a child back then. I was 15 years old, so it was quite a while ago. So thank you for joining me.
Sure.
It's great to be talking to you guys again. And your short story in the Green Lantern 80th Anniversary Spectacular issue is all about legacy. I want to talk about Kyle's legacy and your legacy with the franchise. Let's start with the obvious. What position do we have to sign to get more of you two together? Or is it more of a send a million green rings to the DC office kind of thing?
I think it's a lot easier than that. I'm pretty sure Daryl and I will work together, you know, anywhere, anytime on anything, just because, it's such a good partnership. Now, maybe Daryl's going to come in here and tell me I'm all wrong. But it's such a good partnership that he's one of my favorite people in the world, period. So why wouldn't I want to work with him? We did, 7 years on Green Lantern together?
Yep.
We sort of know each other well enough. We know each other's predilections and storytelling and all that kind of stuff that we can kind of work in shorthand a little bit. He knows what I'm looking for. I know what he's going to do. It's a sheer pleasure on every occasion when we get to work with each other.
I agree.
So what you're saying is Ron's not a liar. Got it.
Absolutely not.
So that actually leads into a little bit to my next question. So I know you guys recently did a crowdfunded project together. Did that make collaborating easier this time around, or was it just like riding a bike where because you had all that experience on Green Lantern together, you just fell right back into those rhythms?
I think for me, certainly it was just like, you know, I always compare it to, you know, it's like putting on your most comfortable pair of jeans and, you know, an old worn hoodie that feels just right. It is like riding a bike. You just pick right up where you left off. And when Daryl and I did a book called Harkins Raiders for Ominous Press, which was a sort of one shot original graphic novel hardcover. That was the first time we worked together on something of any length in quite a while. And it was just like, you know, it was just like we had, you know, we were picking up the conversation exactly where we left off. And I think the only difference was that Harkins was the first time Daryl had done, has done the art digitally for something, from start to finish. And one of the cool things for me was kind of watching Daryl get more and more comfortable with the tool, with the digital tools. The whole book looks great, but you can sort of see the evolution of Daryl getting more and more comfortable with
training wheels to the final thing.
I think it's subtle, but I look at the I've got a copy of it sitting right here. I look at it fairly often and just it's, you know, it's all you. It's what we did for 7 years on Green Lantern, but it's sort of the next evolution of you now that you have all these tools at your disposal.
The thing is, when I look at just maybe the first 10 pages of Harkins and the last 10, it's like, is this the same guy? Because a lot of it I was figuring out as I went along, but, you know, I knew that, you know, that's the future. I mean, I work digitally for my commercial art, but as far as comics, that's just a different set of muscles. And so I had to, you know, see what works and what didn't, you know, what to keep, what to throw out. I think by the time we got to Green Lantern Legacy, I was more comfortable in my own digital skin at that point. There's still some growth that needs to be there, but I just got to say the production value on this book. When I got my copies of it, I thought, yes, this is exactly what I saw in my head. And before I go on any further, hats off to the colorist, Hi-Fi Color, whoever studio that is. What an amazing job they did. I was perfectly, perfectly happy with what you know, the end result we have here.
I always love, longtime listeners of our show will know that I always love to make sure to give props to the colorists, because that's, especially in the Green Lantern book, that's one of the most important things is colors that are vibrant and that you can make sure you know what everything is going on, especially obviously with Green Lantern, there's a lot of green, so a good colorist is really important.
That's a little bit.
Yeah. So it is incredibly difficult to become a recognized name in comics, a completely different beast to become synonymous with a single character. And obviously, you guys are forever linked with Kyle Rayner and by extension with each other, for better or for worse. I think you guys at least like each other, so that's good. How aware of your legacy on Green Lantern and DC Comics are you? Like, you know, how often does that sort of come up in maybe your regular life, obviously at conventions, and has it gone to your head yet?
There's famous and then there's comics famous, and yeah, those are two wildly different things.
Very different.
You know, no, like once in a while, like I'll pay with a credit card somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? And people go, hey, are you that Ron Mars? Yeah. You know, and then like, you know, maybe I get a free sandwich once in a while.
But I'll tell you what, I used to work at Best Buy, and when I was working at Best Buy one time, I was living in St. Louis, and Cullen Bunn came to buy a laptop. I was like, I'm sorry, are you Cullen Bunn? And he's like, he never gets recognized as Cullen Bunn, you know? Like, obviously, he's a great writer, but, like, nobody recognizes a comic book writer at a Best Buy. You write Sinestro, don't you? He's like, yes, I do. I'm like, oh, that's dope. Can I get an interview with you sometime?
You know, it's, look, what, you know, what we do generally is sit in a room by ourselves, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. That's the reality of doing this job. So when you do have a connection with, you know, with a fellow creator and you have that sort of shared history, that tends to mean a lot. You don't, because there's not a lot of interaction with the audience, except at conventions and signings, stuff like that, you really end up talking to each other more than anything. You know, it's a pleasure to be working with Daryl again, particularly on Kyle, because I think, you know, for better or worse, that, you know, co-creators of Kyle Rayner is going to go both on both of our tombstones. You know, certainly you don't want that to be the only thing you're known for, but you embrace the things that people embrace, I think. And it's very satisfying and gratifying for me to go to a signing or go to a con and have people come up and say, Kyle is my Green Lantern, or that some of the first Green Lantern issues that we did were some of the first comics that some people had. It's a real, that's an honor. I mean, that's stuff that you can't ever match, because, you know, people are saying that you helped get them into comics. You helped, you helped give them this lifetime habit. And that, to me, there's no better honor than that. If somebody discovered some of your stuff at some point and decided, I like the way these stories are told, I'm going to be a comics reader. Man, that's the best thing going.
Well, as creators, we when we were young, we were influenced. Now it feels good to be the influencers. I mean, I'm sure Ron and I both share the common origin of growing up on, like, Jim Starlin's Captain Marvel or anything by Jack Kirby or what have you. Mm-hmm. And so now to be on the other side of that, to have someone say, oh, you know, Kyle is my Green Lantern or whatever, it is an honor, because, you know, we don't set out to be, you know, thought of in anything more than just regular guys, but it just happens because, you know, we worked well together and hopefully created something special that people really think highly of.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, when I started doing this show, I was 15, 16 years old and reading some of your guys' older books and like that. Absolutely. That's something that has that's great that it's inspired fans. Now, I know Ron's been doing a lot of the talking. He's the writer. I get it. But I do have a Daryl specific question. So many artists have struggled to nail the crab mask, the infamous crab mask. Was there any pushback on that design initially? Do you regret it at all?
At some point, I'll probably do a sketchbook of the Kyle Rayner designs that didn't make it, and thank God they didn't make it. Ron probably remembers some of those dated 90s atrocities that I tried to get through editorial, and they didn't make it, and that's a good thing. The mask, initially, what I wanted was, I was really inspired by the 70s Marvel character Sunfire, and I love the idea that he had a mask that followed his nose, but not closely, like a Batman type of mask. Mm-hmm. Just kind of, don't ask me why, I always thought that was fascinating, because it was the only one I could think of that looked like that. So that was my, you know, kind of my influence for that mask. But his costume went through so many changes. It was initially a lot more armored. Our editor, Kevin Dooley, was like, yeah, you're going to want to keep this simpler, because, you know, with some of the designs I wanted to do, it was like 22 pages of that, you pull your hair out. So, you know, keep in mind, this was mid-90s, and, you know, Image was going strong, and a lot of things were happening, and I wanted anything I did to kind of fit right in. But, you know, there were a lot of gimmicks going on, but we never really approached the book like a gimmick. And I think that's, you know, that's really a tribute to why it's still popular to this day. But man, that mask, it just seems like people didn't, there were really accomplished artists that really just couldn't wrap their head around it. And I get why. It's kind of, it was unusual, but that's what they wanted. They wanted the Green Lantern that didn't look anything like anyone we'd seen before.
Well, you certainly achieved that. There was, you know, almost no green on the costume, and obviously that big crab mask. But I mean, it's a design that's now become iconic. But you know, obviously it was a big change back in the day. So that's really cool. Unfortunately, the world lost Danny O'Neill recently. Selfishly, I was really happy that we got another great story from him and Mike Grell in this 80th anniversary issue. And when that 100th anniversary of Green Lantern hits, I'm sure you two will have another chance to sit down and get another fantastic Kyle story. But looking back, is there a story or even a scene you two had wish you'd have done during your run that you never got to?
You know, I think there's always stuff that, you know, stories that you weren't able to tell for one reason or another. You know, with all that stuff, I think you never say never. Stories that you don't tell sort of go back into the memory bank and sometimes come out completely differently with a different character or with a different scenario. So, you know, I never, you know, usually I don't, when I get that question, I usually don't say, well, there was this story I wanted to do, because you never know when you might get the chance. You don't want to spoil it ahead of time. I think the one thing that I will say is that, you know, this is a shared universe, and certain parameters go with that. And if you're borrowing characters or other aspects from other books need to play out in your book, that's just the way it goes. I mean, we had Donna Troy as a love interest in the book for a long time, and then the Wonder Woman office decided they wanted her back. And so abruptly, you have to, you know, we had to write her out of the book. Oh, wait a minute. I guess I don't love you. You're out of here. You know, but that's part of the process. That's part of the, and I guess the UPS man is in the driveway. That's part of the process of working in a shared universe. And you just roll with those punches.
I know we're running a little low on time. Just one final thought. Like I said, we did unfortunately lose Danny O'Neill. I mean, I grew up with stuff like you guys and Jeff Johns, but you guys would have grown up with Danny O'Neill's books. What did Danny O'Neill mean to you guys in particular, you know, his stories and then obviously later on, possibly even, you know, meeting him as a creator?
Danny O'Neill is one of those, you know, if Mount Rushmore could have a lot more than just the few presidents it has, he would be on it as far as not just writing, but just what he contributed to the industry in general. And you know what he brought to Green Lantern, it just added that dimension, which ironically I would say he made it feel like a Marvel character, because I always thought so often DC characters felt kind of, you know, very surface, but you know he fleshed out everything he wrote, Batman, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, whatever it was. And it's one of those things where you'll never forget his influence.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Danny is going to be remembered as one of the great editors of comics of all time, and he's going to be remembered as one of the great writers. There are very few people that sort of work both sides of that street as well as Danny did. And honestly, Danny was on the call when I got the offer to write Green Lantern. Danny was one of the people in the room when I got a call on a Thursday night that said, we're going to be revamping Green Lantern. We want you to write it. And Danny was there along with the late Archie Goodwin, Mike Carlin, Kevin Dooley, the Green Lantern editor, and Paul Levitz, the publisher. So when you get a call with those people on the line, you know that things are going to be really good or really bad. There's not a lot of middle ground for it. Obviously, it turned out to be really good. But, you know, it was, look, to me, Denny is the Green Lantern writer. He's the guy that made Green Lantern into what he is to a great extent. Certainly, John Broome created Hal and, you know, all of those stories, but Denny sort of brought him into the modern era. So to have Denny on the call and then find out what the plan was for Hal was kind of like, oh, really? That's what we're going to do? I've been reminded of this in the last week or so, sadly, that the last time I saw Denny was at a convention here in Albany, New York. And the convention wasn't terribly busy. So Denny and I had, you know, it was a good convention, but there were lulls in the crowd. And so Denny and I, our tables were near each other, and I had a chance to go down and chat with him for a while and just kind of catch up. And you know, Denny told me some things about the decision to offer me the book and what had happened in that room just before they called me. So, you know, stuff that I had never heard. I mean, that's stuff that happened 25 years ago, and I had never heard these stories. And then he went on to say that he felt like I did right by Hal, and he liked how I handled the story that they gave me to tell. Which, you know, if Danny O'Neill says you handled Hal Jordan properly, that's
die happy. Yeah.
That's an arrow that goes in your quiver, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, you know, sadly now it's the last time I saw Danny, but, that's something that I'm going to hang on to for a long time because, you know, Danny was, just generous to a fault with treating everybody else that he came into contact with like an equal. And you know, he certainly made me feel that even, you know, even this last time that I saw him he was just a guy talking to another guy. And obviously that's not the case. That's, right. You know, like Daryl said, Denny's on the Mount Rushmore of comics, but, he had a generous, kind spirit. He was a great editor, a great writer, but I think overall he was an even better person.
As far as, final times getting to talk to somebody, that's probably, you know, one of the best you can get. So thank you so much, guys, for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much for your work on Green Lantern in the past, in the present, in the future. And I look forward to seeing more of you guys work on the book.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thank you guys so much for watching. If you want to find more great Green Lantern content, you can find that at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. We have articles. There's a forum there. So please check us out. And until next time, stay green.
I have this magic green. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me and says, Hal, what have you done with your life?